Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable on this Veterans Day, the 11th of November, 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us as we gather together to talk about what is happening in our world, as complicated and confusing as it often is. Let us go and introduce the group, and then just a quick reminder that you can always be a part of the group and of the conversation. All you have to do is write to us, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Chartog is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm not too good, Joe. I've been a little worried about we had a discussion yesterday on whether or not Trump would try something like a coup. And there were those on the panel who thought that that's impossible, that won't happen. And yet yesterday, a couple of things happened. Pompeo got on and said he was ready for the Trump, smooth Trump transition. We had the Defense Department, where the soldiers would have to be, if you were having a coup, changing all of the top leadership. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's possible. And then knowing Trump, and then there's an announcement of a million-man march, Make America Great Again, million-man march. So it seems to me there's growing evidence that this is something that a guy who cannot give up power for whatever his reasons, and we know some of them, might be. So I'm very concerned.
We go to Chris Churchill, Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Beat that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll get into all that soon. But for now, happy Veterans Day to everybody.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. And if I could echo Chris's comments, my respect and thanks to everybody who has served this nation, but also the families of those that serve as well. So my heartfelt thank you.
Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. I have nothing heavy to say. I'm blowing catnip bubbles at my kitten. It's a great distraction.
That sounds great.
Video.
At some point, not now, but at some point, I'll ask you what a catnip bubble is.
Okay.
She's an enabler.
I didn't know those two words went together, but that's what Mike is saying. Yes. Is that a thing, Mike? All right. We fact checked it. It is a thing. Okay. Not that I doubted you, of course, Rosemary. Well, again, we welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And, you know, as bad as things are, we'll probably get most mail about catnip bubbles. That's what's going to happen. All right. So Joe Biden planning his administration, says GOP leaders ignoring his win are intimidated by Trump. President-elect Joe Biden said Tuesday he's hoping to name several cabinet-level nominees before Thanksgiving and downplayed the difficulties that his team is having amid a lack of cooperation by President Trump in the transfer of power. We're already beginning the transition, Biden said. We are well underway. Biden said the Republican leaders who are not acknowledging the legitimacy of his victory are, quote, mildly intimidated by the sitting president, and that Trump's refusal to concede the election is, quote, an embarrassment. Speaking to reporters for the first time since declaring victory in the presidential election Saturday night, Biden sought to show that he is hard at work preparing for his new role and is unencumbered by Trump's attempts to block a transfer of power. Biden spoke at the Queen Theater in Wilmington, where his team made every effort to project power and authority. Biden stood before a large blue screen displaying the words "Office of the President-elect." So given what's going on at the White House, Alan, this is really the only thing that the President-elect can do, right?
There really isn't anything he can do. Look, if you look back in history at the way coups are committed, and what people do, this is what happened. Now, I get the doubters, and I hope they're all right, that it's not going to happen. But let's say you were a president and you were facing the possibility of either losing your fortune or jail for some of the things that you've been protected from, being above the law, even though they say no man is above the law, no person is above the law. Then the question is this guy we know who has been saying all along, I will not accept anything but by winning. Otherwise, the election has to be rigged. We saw Hitler do it. We've seen other people do it. And I am saying this is a very dangerous time for America.
Bob Griffin.
You know, Alan, I'd like to tell you you're wrong, but I do share several of the concerns that you have expressed. You know, my disagreement with the comment from the president-elect is the word mildly.
Right.
I think there are folks that are just absolutely petrified. I also continue to struggle with understanding at what point in time people remember that they're not Republicans, but they're Americans, and that there's something greater and more important, and that's making sure that this country will survive beyond them, and frankly, their children and their grandchildren. You know, we heard news before we got on about what was occurring in Hong Kong, and I can't help but draw a comparison between the anti-democratic movement of the Chinese government in Hong Kong with what I'm seeing with Trump and Trump's allies and how they're handling this whole election. It really is very, very disturbing.
Rosemary.
Well, I was relying on Chris Churchill to be the person to say, get a grip. It's not that bad. I am choosing to see it from Joe Biden's point of view. I don't think that's just an illusion that he's putting out there to make him seem stronger. I think it really is just a horrible display of poor sportsmanship by Donald Trump, and he will go down in history as a jerk, as he should. But there really is nothing he can do. Biden is proceeding, as I predicted yesterday he would, with a transition in which he does not need Donald Trump. What does Donald Trump know about government that Joe Biden cannot either know himself or get from people who will be more than happy to talk with him, with the exception of national security access? And I think that will come as soon as this election is goes to the Electoral College in early December, and that's plenty of time for him to get up to speed by January 20th. So I just don't see the danger. It's horrible what he's doing with the military, but our military knows that too. The number of former top-ranking officials coming forward and saying this is unacceptable is striking, and I just can't see the little weak bureaucrats that he's putting in, the sycophants that he's putting in the Pentagon for 70 days will amass enough power or strength to make a big difference. So I'm not panicking. I think it's kind of amusing to watch. I love that the postal worker in Philadelphia, who was the basis for the Republicans' complaint about Pennsylvania, has now recanted and then recanted his recanting. He's a lunatic, as are people chewing on. I mean, I can't, what has happened to this country that people believe in this stuff and are behaving so poorly? But ultimately, do I think it's going to rock the democracy and bring us to a coup? No, I do not believe that. So that's it. Chris, you back me?
Chris?
Yeah, I do. I think the coup stuff is just kind of, you know, a bit over the top. I just don't think we're anything. I don't think there'd be any support in the military for that sort of thing. I don't think there'd be any support among Trump supporters, the overwhelming majority of them, for that sort of thing. And I just don't think that's what Trump is ultimately up to. I think he's just throwing a bit of a tantrum because he doesn't like the result. But I think, you know, when the time comes for him to leave, he'll walk out the door or he'll be escorted out the door. And that'll be that, you know.
But, you know, to Alan's point, the thing I can't get over, though, is that we keep, Alan's absolutely right that that he's told us what he's going to do. I mean, he said this,
yeah.
And he's not going to accept the election, and he's going to, and I just, we see it happening before us, and I just, if I'm afraid that if we look and say, oh, well, there he goes again, that by the time we realize what's happening, it'll be too late.
Well,
let me just jump in with, I'm not panicking, but one comment that I'd like, you know, Chris, I'd like to your perspective on. I feel like he's testing the waters to see if he has enough strength to, or enough support to try to overturn the election. I actually think I may not go as far as to say that they're already arming for a coup, but I would definitely say that he is probing and testing, and these are all steps that lead us down a very, very dark path.
I mean, I should make clear, I don't think that what he's doing is responsible or, you know, and I agree that there's a lot of, that this is dangerous stuff for the future of the country. And especially in terms of, you know, faith in our elections and the processes that, you know, guide it. But, you know, there was an important story, I think, in the Washington Post, I believe this morning, that noted that a good amount of the money that they're raising for these lawsuits is going into the Save America. I think it's called the Save America PAC, which is Trump's political action committee that he's setting up for his post-presidency, you know, impact and influence. So the fact that he's raising money, he's using these lawsuits.
What's that?
Hold on.
He races in Georgia.
I lost you there.
But she was saying that a lot of the money is going to the RNC.
Yeah, but I want to hear what Chris.
No,
yeah.
The money that they are fundraising. I mean, they're sending out these email blasts saying that, you know, the election was fake. It was a fraud. We have to fight this in the courts and yada yada. And that money is not going toward the court fights. The majority of it. The majority of it is going into the Save America PAC, which is for his post-presidency. I mean, he can use it for pretty much whatever he wants to. He can pay off campaign debts. He can use it to influence, you know, other races. He can use it to travel around the country. I mean,
pay his legal bills.
I think pay his legal bills, perhaps. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not much better. I mean, the fact that you're undermining faith in the democracy to raise money for your own PAC is also pretty sinister, but it's less sinister than a coup. I would say.
Chris, I'm sorry, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a couple of thoughts. I'll go back to actually the very beginning and tell you that if we could take a whole roundtable and just talk about what makes kittens happy, that would be as our world is. So I salute
yarn,
the
catnip bubbles. Catnip bubbles. Yeah, that's it. That's all you need.
You know, every day that goes on and having been part of the transition, I was part of the transition between the Obama administration and the Trump administration. And it's incredibly important because it sends both a clear message to the bureaucracy that things are changing, but it also gives the incoming administration the opportunity to understand exactly what the issues are within these agencies, and they're very complex. There's so much information that needs to be gathered, and all of this work, you know, every day that this work isn't getting done makes it harder for the administration to be successful on as of the 20th of January. So while I think Biden is taking a very measured tone, I think we're still within an okay window, but a couple more weeks of not having access to things like the briefing books, not having access to understanding that the personnel records and how organizations have been established, changed, or used during the current administration, really weakens the country's ability to respond. I mean, this isn't a minor issue. This isn't just an issue of we're not giving them money. This is part of the normal transfer of power between governments.
Former Ohio governor, Republican, and former presidential candidate John Kasich, who never fails to frustrate me when he speaks, was on CNN yesterday and said that he's being told from his Republican sources in both the House and Senate that they expect this to go on for about a week and then it'll subside. And then he paused and he said, "But I doubt that." Well, okay, and that's isn't that what we're concerned about? Yeah, it's the I doubt that we're all worried about. And to Alan's point, and even to yours, Bob, that if he's testing the waters, and that's what this is, well, what is going to be the litmus test to say, okay, the water is good, let's jump in and go for it?
You know, that's an amazing question, and I honestly can't answer that. Although every time, you know, for every part of this administration where I thought this President Trump was going to moderate, that he was going to grow into the importance and majesty of the position to become an adult and to become a leader. He's failed me in every single step. So every time that I've thought that he can't cross that line, he's crossed that line. So, you know, we're all pretending as if, oh, but this is just him throwing another temper tantrum. We're getting to a break point where there's not too many opportunities more for other temper tantrums, and that's really scary to me. You know, I think he can convince himself that he's been robbed. I will also note,
well, that he already has.
If you follow the logic of the Republicans, then I want to congratulate the Democrats for gaining all of those seats in the Senate. I mean, you know, if all of the elections were so fraudulent, then none of those Republican senators won those elections. Then.
Those were from the magic ballots, Bob.
Yes, right.
Let's remember. I was just going to say one thing, and that is, let's remember what this guy Trump is. He's a norm breaker, among other things. It is not a law, right, that you have to turn the stuff over to the Democrats if they won, or the Republicans if they won. It's a norm. It's the way it's always been. And that's what Trump does all the time. He ignores, because he doesn't have to. It's not a law, so he doesn't do it.
Well, and the big thing that Rosemary was saying before is the difference. I mean, Biden doesn't need a tour of the White House. He knows the building quite well, thank you. But there is the security information. And, Bob, I'd be interested in your thoughts on that, of what disadvantage that gives, and not only to the vice president, who I'm sure will read briefings and will keep up on this stuff, but I'm more worried / interested in your thoughts on, more worried about the situation and interested in your thoughts on what that means for how the rest of the world perceives us in this transition period.
Yeah, there's a couple of thoughts there. One, I would absolutely guarantee you that Biden is going to be reading the briefing documents, and they're not going to be the pop-up color books that the current president is using. What's happening right now, or what will continue to happen, is that the Biden administration isn't going to be able to have access to a lot of the top secret information and a lot of the intelligence community information, and what they're going to be missing is the ability to start to think about the trends and patterns that show up. So when the president gets his morning briefing, you know, he's getting intelligence analysis from places like the CIA and the FBI, Homeland Security, and others, and it's giving him given his staff, given the administration, both what's happening right now, but equally important, what are the trends that are starting to concern the analysts?
Just about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, those trends are really important, because that starts to tell them how they have to direct, our policy and our statecraft. It's a big deal, Joe.
All right, we're going to pause there, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our panel, Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your thoughts, panel, at WAMC.org. Keep your letters short and to the point, and we'll get to as many as we can, panel, at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. 35 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Veterans Day, the 11th of November, and very nice to have you all with us. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo make up the panel. We have a lot of letters, so we'll go to those and we'll continue our conversation that way. Sue writes, just hearing you all talk about the access for the incoming Biden Dems, just one question. Why do you all believe there is anything for them to transfer? There are no binders. No one has taken notes or reports. They can't give what they don't have. Biden will have to see real, R-E-E-L, reruns.
Can I add one thing here? Yeah. I don't think Biden needs these briefings as much as some other incoming president might. He could, for example, talk to Colonel Vindman, who just left the security detail. He could talk to Brennan, who was there until 4 years ago. They all have contacts and deep knowledge of what's going on. He doesn't need those briefings. He's not as dependent on those briefings as somebody like Trump was, who knew nothing about all of this. I think it's really an over... and he said it himself yesterday, Biden did, that this is it's inconvenient, it's not right, but it is not crucial.
Bob?
Except nobody should be talking top secret or classified secrets, even to Biden. I mean, until he's recognized, they can't have those in-depth conversations. And the one thing for the
right.
for the reader, I understand and agree that they've been that this administration has been abysmal in running the government. There is still an awful lot of information that's being packaged and presented every day within these agencies. I mean, just if you just think about what we just heard on the news, you know, you think about what's going on in Hong Kong, you think about what's going on in Armenia, you start to think about what's going on in COVID. There's so many issues that are incredibly complex that the next administration needs to get up to speed really fast. And it's not just Biden. What you're starting to get to is. It allows him to really start to think about the team and what kind of skills he needs in his cabinet. So while I don't want to say it's the end of the world, I do think it's more than just an inconvenience.
But Alan, it's a norm.
Can I ask one more question of the expert? And it's this: I'm far more worried by his putting all of those little minions into the Pentagon positions by what that they are then set up to get him, what kind of records he wants. He doesn't care at all about Armenia. He does not care at all about anything except Russia. And is he now getting documents that will allow him to continue to pursue his obsession, which is that he was not helped by Russia? That I think, is a bigger problem than anything Joe Biden faces, is what he will do with records that he has had access to and may continue to get.
Well, that's what this is. That's largely what this is all about, Rosemary, right? I mean, David Iglesias wrote this morning that the big battle in the White House is over whether to declassify all this very sensitive information that might put national security at risk, but would also, apparently, according Trump seems to believe anyways, clear him on a lot of the Russia allegations and innuendos. So, I mean, that's part of why there's this big shakeup in defense, is that the defense officials absolutely don't want this stuff released, and Trump absolutely does. There's apparently also another battle brewing. Trump wants to pull troops out of Afghanistan and other parts of the Middle East before he leaves, and you know, there are people in the Defense Department who are dead set against that as well.
Bob,
yeah,
I think those explanations make more sense to me than a coup coming. I'll say that.
And as for the personnel, you know, what the administration is going to come in and is going to have to fill almost 4,000 positions. I mean, if you start to think about the political appointees, and the political appointees are critical because they're the ones that direct the career bureaucracy on what the priorities of the administration. And as a former career bureaucrat, I was a career senior executive in the government, and my job was to carry out the policy direction of the political leadership. So in the case of the Department of Defense, I would imagine that on day one, they're going to start the process of putting, you know, they're going to have to start to put their own people in. But the longer that goes, the longer these Trump appointments are in, Trump appointees are in place. You know, I think that the more mischief that they can do. Now, technically, and this is kind of interesting, as of the 20th of January, anybody who's a political appointee does not have any authority or power anymore. I mean, that they are stripped of their powers and responsibilities and authorities.
Alan, you were talking about norms. We have these norms for a reason, though, right?
We do, and they have always acted almost with the force of law, but they're not law. We had one letter from a fellow who said that there is a Presidential Transition Act, but that isn't with somebody holding somebody else's arm behind their back and squeezing hard.
Right.
Obviously, this president has the ability to ignore laws, which he has always done, and which he will continue to do, in my opinion. Hey, guys, I don't want to be where I am in this discussion. I've laid out, you know, two or three things which I think are terribly important. The Secretary of State saying that he's in on a transition to the Trump administration, the Defense Department changing the people who are in charge. So to me, that smells really badly. and the Million Man March, which is apparently being thought about for Washington on the Make America Great side. All of that, and we'll see what happens today, because every day something happens. Now, it could be that this is a monumental fake-out, that this is, you know, the idea is that Trump will pretend that some of this could happen and see what he gets out of it, or maybe he gets his people behind him. I don't think we can ignore it any more than the people of Germany could ignore what was happening there. Nevertheless, I'm with Rosemary. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that the chances are it won't happen. But I'm just laying out the idea that Trump is giving us a lot of clues that it could happen.
Bob?
Yeah, and Alan, if you add the Department of Justice and what's going on with Barr and the direction that he's giving, I mean, again, those are, yeah, they're norms, but they're norms that we've built the foundations of some of our institutions on. So they actually have, you know, almost more weight than the laws sometimes. And again,
absolutely,
you know, he's manipulating justice, he's manipulating state, he's manipulating Department of Defense. Those are all, again, look at your history. Those are all the basis of power in any nation.
I think I saw, Bob, yesterday, I saw a poll that got taken across the many strata of the American people that said only 3% of the people don't think that there was a legitimate election here. That's pretty scary if a president were to stand up to that kind of public opinion.
Actually, the Pew Foundation did a study and found that 80% of the American population overall believe it was a legitimate election. That includes, though, only 50% of Republicans.
Okay.
Wait, okay, I have to process that, but okay.
Still pretty impressive.
Well, I mean, and the numbers are impressive, right? I mean, if the numbers are right and we don't have any, and so far not a case has taken root, meaning the lawsuits that have been filed, but the numbers are impressive. You have, what, a difference of 5 million votes. You have the Electoral College and three states that still haven't even been called yet. So, and two that could potentially go for Joe Biden. So that also seems like it would be difficult to overcome, right, Alan? I mean, that's that you have that and the backing of the American people. But that, of course, that doesn't stop. I mean, we have how many? And I guess is it right to compare this to the government's response to coronavirus in the sense of 90% of Americans think that we should wear masks and 70% of Americans believe that there should be some sort of shutdown, and yet we're not doing it and we're ignoring it.
Everybody should go back and read their Russian history, the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. The Mensheviks had greater numbers, and so I can only say a coup is a coup. If there is going to be a coup, we'll see what happens. Okay, I'm sorry. Something just rang in my ear.
All right. Let's see. We'll go back to the letters if we can, unless anybody wanted to comment on that. Dennis and Linda say we watched the first part of a three-part series, Rise of the Nazis, on PBS last night. The parallels of 1930s Germany and 2020 America was a bit frightening. We recommend it for a wake-up and a good scare. Yeah, I'm already scared.
No.
Go ahead.
I'll pass.
All right.
I need a good scare.
I just want to go over to Rosemary's and watch Catnip Bubbles.
Me too.
And especially if she has her friend over with some hooch. Mary says, why have none of you commented on the likelihood that Trump and his allies at the top are stalling so they can, quote, scrub all the computers of important data or make like there is nothing to be concerned about? It was only yesterday, a week after the election, that House members sent a letter asking that all data, archives, documents, etc., which pertain to all of the legal fights and legislation be kept. ? And I don't disregard the subject in the letter, which I agree with, but why can't you also do that and still acknowledge the election, I guess, is my question for you, Bob.
I, Yeah, there's a couple things there, Joe. I mean, and I think one of the saddest things for me is also that, you know, this childish behavior from the GOP and Trump, it really it steals the joy out of the election. And I, you know, in a time when there's so little joy, that really bugs me. Now, this is going to be a strange answer about information and information storage in the federal government. But one of the advantages of the federal government systems being so archaic and difficult to use is that it's actually really hard to completely wipe out data. It's not impossible. I don't want to pretend that it's not impossible, but there are a lot of safeguards in place that the mass deletion of emails is more difficult, and it's also something that can be easily flagged. I will also remind anybody who's listening, particularly anybody in government who's thinking about hitting the delete key, you understand that if you're deleting official records, that is a felony. And if you live in Florida, you won't be able to vote. So, you know, if you're thinking about doing mischief, understand that you will get caught. You will get caught.
What I mean to be flipped.
Just ask Hillary Clinton.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Just ask Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't the but. We assume that a lot of this is being done as it happens, right? I mean, we saw this in the Ukraine call, that there's sort of an erasure that's happening as it's going on.
Yep.
Well, it's an erasure because they're just not documenting in some cases. So, I mean, you can't delete a document that wasn't created. So in that respect, you're right. And I think one of the big losses are going to be what happened in a lot of the calls, where normally you would have a log and it says, you know, we told, you know, the president told the president of Ukraine X, Y, and Z, because that's how we establish, our policy agreements. And if that's not written down, then that becomes a big gap that's going to have to be cleared. I do think there's an awful lot of work that's going to have to be done at state to both repair and get up to speed there. So I'm looking at state and Treasury as really two very critical appointees. Not that the other ones aren't. Not that DHS and Justice and DOD and Ag and Interior aren't important, but it's unusual to have this much mess at state.
I love when you talk government lingo, Bob. We're going to take a break.
I'm sorry
when...
about that.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville. And she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg. And the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She
turned blood red. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable on this Veterans Day, 9 minutes before 10 o'clock on the 11th of November. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel. And we go back to the letters that we have this morning and work our way through them. We have many. We go
Joe,
to,
just,
yes.
Just one comment, and that is, thank you for playing Johnny Cash and that wonderful tune. I've heard it 1,000 times, and I like it every time I hear it.
Well, you know, it's hard to bail out of it, unfortunately. I want to hear it to the end, but we also have a show to do.
It's great. It's a great, it's a great performance.
It certainly is. Let's see. Let's go to Lucian, who says, fortunately, this is the first time I've heard of this, as it could really be awful. If they do this, I know the impulse will be to counter-protest. But will these people be the same armed terrorists that have been showing up to support Trump so far? I think this is about the Million Man March that you were referring to, Alan. Mm-hmm. The best thing to do is to totally ignore their efforts and give them no airtime and no counter-protest. The only thing is they're spreading the virus as they go. My first impulse was to think I will be amongst the counter-protesters and probably armed myself. It didn't take long for my mind to get around to what a bad idea this is. That from Lucian.
Yeah, the counter protests and you know, at some point I'm sure we'll talk to COVID about COVID and what's going on across the country right now. I mean, this is confluence of just these really bad issues. I'm also interested to see, you know, how many people show up. I mean, Trump has had a history of holding events that he swore were going to be huge, and they came to nothing. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, indeed, there may not even be such a march. You know, there's a lot of talk about it, but it's unclear whether there is actually going to be one.
Well, also, and I just want to go to one line in the listener's letter, which I think about that we shouldn't cover it. I do think we should cover it. I think we should know what is going on. And you know, I think, and Rosemary, I'd be interested to see if you agree with me on this, but, you know, I think that we were hurt perhaps by the media making up for what they did in 2016 and completely dismissing and not showing us and bailing out of these huge rallies that the president was having in the waning days of the campaign.
I never thought they should cover the whole rally. It's just not necessary, but somebody
I agree.
Should be there covering it and referring to the items said. And I would say the same about all this planning for marches. I just joined Parlay, the alternative Twitter, Facebook account that a bunch of conservatives are going on to it. And Kennedy, for example, is one of their big contributors. And they're upset not just with what they call the mainstream media, but with Fox as well. And they believe that they are uncovered. They totally believe in Trump. It is shocking to read how far, to me, it seems so far and extreme. Also, they have the most amazing profanity that I have ever read anywhere, and I'm sort of an expert on that. But it is something that you need to pay attention to.
You know, I had no interest in going there until you mentioned the profanity.
Oh, my God. I cannot even... close to telling you ideas of what it is.
That's like poetic.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, as extreme in their profanity as in their crazy ideas.
Sam,
Joe, if you don't introduce Rosemary as a profanity expert for every roundtable from now on, I'm going to be totally disappointed in you.
I just thought it was implied. Sam says, "At what point does Trump cross the line to sedition or treason?" Well, there's a question for the group.
Well, if he gives away secrets, Bob already told us that that's a federal crime. So that would be one step. If we can point out that he used secrets to gain some sort of favor, either access or money or cheap loans, that would be actionable.
Alan, we have a couple letters on this. One from Lee who says, what can the average citizen do as all that's happening? I mean, people went out, they voted. Now what do you do?
Well, I think a lot has to do with writing letters to the paper, getting out on the streets. If, in fact, the unthinkable happens, and it is unthinkable, and there is a coup, it's going to be time for an awful lot of courage on the part of an awful lot of people. Otherwise, we lose it all. I think it's obvious that if any of this stuff happens, the average citizen is going to be able to make their voice heard. And it's going to take some courage to do it.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to reiterate. I don't think there's anything to – there's not going to be a coup. There is no – I think a lot of this is just alarmism, and I understand why people are fearful, but I just think we're getting ahead of ourselves. The election was only 8 days ago. Ballots are still being counted. Just be patient. People will tell Trump he has to go, and he'll go, and that'll be that.
The only thing I'd add to that, Joe, is, you know, but we still have to remain vigilant. And I keep thinking about Reagan's comment about the Soviets, and it's so apropos here, is that trust but verify. And make sure that folks down in Washington know that the people are continuing to watch, and it's our expectation that they are going to honor the democratic ideals of this election. And I say democratic as far as the voting,
right,
not the party.
Let's go back to letters, and we go to Cynthia says, so how is Fox News talking about this? And there is the war that we talked about yesterday between Fox and the president. And they seem to be with Hannity, some of their hosts being the exception, but they have accepted, my understanding, right, is that they have accepted the results.
Yeah, I think, I think Fox has been really good. I mean, Hannity aside, I think, you know, they called, I don't know if we've talked about it before, but they called the election in Arizona the night of the race, and they faced intense pressure to reverse that call. They refused to do it. They have called out misinformation and lies when the administration has spouted them. They've routinely said that there's no information of any sort of widespread voter fraud. So I give Fox kudos for how they've handled this. They are kind of angering a part of their base or part of their audience, and that does kind of leave open the possibility of a Trump TV being resurrected. But I think Fox has done really well.
Roseanne says, I think we're forgetting Biden has been in office for 8 years and knows all that can and does happen inside the White House, especially with our military. When Biden smiled, and I find that smile warming, he knows what we don't. Everything will be fine. Trump will leave by choice or force, and he'll eventually die, and a supporter's flame will burn out. Well, that's the long view, isn't it? Alan, you say so often, that's the ultimate term limit, right?
God has term limits.
And I was laughing about Chris's comment about Trump TV, because this is going to be another endeavor that Trump will drive into the ground and bankrupt. So I look forward to watching Trump TV go into bankruptcy as well.
It's the coming attractions. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, your letters, panel at WAMC.org. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we go to more letters, and then we'll change the subject in just a moment. But there's a lot to talk about.
Hey, Joe, before you go to letters, though, there's a line in that song that I think is brilliant, so thank you for playing that. But when the tax man comes to the door, the house looks like a rummage sale. That has as much to do with what Trump is doing right now, I think, as anything. Because I do think that he is facing a whole host of litigation, and orange is not just going to be the color of his hair potentially in the future. It could be the color of his jumpsuit.
Nice. All right. Let's go to a family. Mary, I guess. We're a military family. Saw a post from Parler last night. Oh, okay, they sent a picture, which they're not supposed to do, and I, not just because I can't open it. Suzanne says, remember when Trump was musing during a super spreader event about what would happen if he lost to Biden? He said he might have to leave the country. Maybe he will take refuge with one of his despot pals. Go to Joseph. What the GOP is doing at the state level with the electors is a coup attempt in itself. No military is needed. Can we talk a little bit about that, of what is happening with the Electoral College?
That is a very dangerous situation. There are ways in which the electors can be manipulated by state legislatures, and we haven't talked much about it, but it could be done. So what you could have is the people voting, the electors being theoretically elected, and then a change in the way in which this is goes when the electors meet. I am sure that Donald Trump is thinking about this.
Bob?
Yeah, I mean, if you're grasping at straws, it's definitely a straw you could grasp at. Although I have been seeing articles where the press is starting to talk to some of the individual potential electors, and they're acknowledging that their responsibility is to follow the direction of the vote in their communities. But again, if you're desperate, and this group appears to be very desperate, then they're gonna, you can't discount them doing anything there.
Now, there are some states that's the law. There are others that theoretically the electors could do. Could disassociate themselves with their instructions.
Rosemary?
I think this is another, although there's going to be a coup, alarmist point of view. If the election had been closer, this is not really a close election. this would be more of a threat. But to go against the will of the people when it is so obvious, I mean, we've got a 5 million vote difference here. I just don't see it happening. I don't know how that would be justified in any state legislature or by any action by elect.
I'm losing you, Rosemary. Just
you're losing me.
Once
yeah.
I haven't moved.
Okay, I don't know. You were going in and out there. I mean,
let me say, I don't think there is going to be a coup. I think there could be a coup, and I think that we have got to be very, very careful about watching what's happening. I think Bob was right before when he said that vigilance is called for now, and because the president is giving
it. How would it happen exactly? I just don't see how it's in any way feasible. And I honestly find it a little bit insulting to the military and to all the people who would have to go along with that to think that they would participate in such a thing. I mean, do you really think the tanks are going to be rolling on the street and that American soldiers are going to be okay with this whole thing? It just seems so far-fetched to me.
Well, I do not, but I'm telling you that the scenario is being painted, not by me, but by Trump. I gave you the list of things earlier today of all the things that he's doing and all the things that Pompeo is saying and the change of leadership in the Defense Department and the Million Man March and all of the rest. All of that stuff is very concerning, not only to me, by the way, but to an awful lot of other people. If you see the stuff that is coming out on CNN, for example, they are quite growing alarm. Let's see, I wrote something down. Growing alarm as Trump denies defeat. Well, you know, Chris, you could well be right. And I could certainly love to agree with you. But I would love to see stable leadership at the Defense Department and not a crony of Trump's who will obey orders. Let me put it that way.
And Chris, well, I don't think tanks are going to roll, but I'm more concerned about the army of attorneys and manipulation of the Department of Justice and manipulation of the courts. They would try to finagle a way to change the results. And again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's something that I want to watch to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Yep.
I mean, I think there's actually a very optimistic story in all this that we know. During a very difficult time with the pandemic and everything, our election system actually held up really well. We had these counts are going forward. You have Republican secretaries of state saying that there is no fraud. You have Trump can ask for recounts and he can file lawsuits. But so far, none of those lawsuits have gone anywhere. I mean, to me, this is all kind of encouraging that the system has held up under this stress pretty well. And I don't know. I mean, I think that there are reasons. I think there are reasons for alarm.
Hold on.
One at a time.
Chris, go ahead and then we'll go to Rosemary.
I think there are reasons for alarm in some of what's happening in the Defense Department, but it's not a coup that I think people should be alarmed about. I think people should be alarmed about dramatic shifts in policy, you know, pulling troops out of Afghanistan or you know, releasing classified information that could potentially be damaging. I think those things are alarming enough on their own without having to say that there's a coup coming. And by the way, I'm generally in favor of pulling troops out of Afghanistan. I just think it should be done in a thoughtful, deliberate way, not, you know, 3 weeks before a new president comes into office.
Rosemary?
I wanted to chime in and agree with Chris. I think we also got encouragement yesterday listening to the Supreme Court argue about the Affordable Care Act. This is not a Supreme Court that is going to let all the structures of government fall apart because they were appointed, most of them, many of them were appointed by Trump. You saw them saying, you know, Congress needs to make laws about health care. Don't leave it to us to bring them down or pull them down. So, as to your fear, Bob, about any of these election cases going to the Supreme Court, he's going to lose there. They're not going to let this happen when you have a 5 million vote difference between one candidate and the next.
Go ahead, Bob.
No, I hope you're right. But again, I'll go back to the comment about vigilance. And just because I don't think my house is going to burn down, that doesn't mean I don't put a smoke detector up. So I'm just urging everybody both to while being calm, making sure that we're continuing to be vigilant and watching what's going on and making sure that people understand that we're watching.
And that's your point too, right, Alan?
Yes, indeed it is. I don't know what else to say. I can't say it enough times. We have a Supreme Court which did the right thing yesterday. Why they did the right thing? Well, that's another whole story, obviously.
Well, they haven't ruled yet, right? But we think it's headed in that direction.
Obviously, the Chief Judge had a great deal to do with what was happening. And, we do know that when Trump appointed Barrett to the court, he said, I'm going to need her there if should I object to the way the election was run. That was pretty scary, wasn't it?
Yes.
Chris?
Well, it was inappropriate for him to say, but it didn't scare me because I don't think that anything would ever come of it. I guess I just have a little bit more faith in the institutions. That I just don't think that the Supreme Court justices are going to rule for a president just to keep him in power. I mean, first of all, the thing that everybody tends to forget is all the people who would have to participate in the coup will be very happy to see Trump gone. And that includes many of the Supreme Court justices. That includes Mitch McConnell. It includes most senators, most Republicans. They've been itching for this guy to be gone since he was elected. They're not going to participate in anything to keep him around any longer than they have to.
Then why aren't they accepting the results of the election?
Exactly.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Georgia. I think Mitch McConnell is trying to do a little bit of a delicate dance where he doesn't want to tick off sections of the vote that they will need to win Georgia. He wants to make it look as though they're at least willing to put up a bit of a fight or at least willing to listen to Trump's claims about fraud. I mean, I put it this way. If there was no special election coming up in Georgia, I think what a lot of Republicans are saying right now would be entirely different. I think they would much more be saying, get on with it, President Trump, you lost the election.
With that said,
to which I say, if Schmiff, and I don't agree with you at all on this, Chris, the fact of the matter is that there's a solid, solid wall of Republicans who are saying, we're not Republican senators who are saying we are not going to deviate from our leadership, even if it's American democracy at stake. I think this is disgraceful.
Well, I'm not saying I think what they're doing is right. I'm just saying that the Georgia election explains why some of them are doing it, including Mitch McConnell. There are other people who will stick with Trump no matter what. I don't disagree with that. But there are much more reasonable voices who are just saying, and I think it's the majority of voices who are saying, well, let's let the process play out. Let's see what the recounts show. Let's see if the Trump campaign can produce any evidence of significant fraud. And if the Trump campaign fails to do that, I think those people will do what they should do and say that it's time to give up the ghost. No,
I was just going to say, I mean, I understand that point, but and I certainly understand that a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans aren't going to listen to the New York Times. But, their front page today is election officials nationwide find no fraud. They're talking to election officials in states, both Republican and Democrat, and they're saying there is no fraud. So what more do they need?
By the way, the alternative site Parlay has made huge fun of that story. Like, sure, of course, what are these election people going to say other than that we did a great job? Even when there's research into these issues, it's not taken as gospel by the other side.
And do we?
So you don't believe the New York Times?
No, go ahead.
You don't believe the New York Times? Did
you not believe it?
The
far left,
you do not.
Telling New York Times.
Yeah, well, you and I disagree about that too. T-O-O.
About the New York Times being the greatest newspaper in the world, we disagree?
No, about the fact that the New York Times hasn't done a credible job. They have. They called every election official Republican
and
Democrat.
No, you misunderstand. This is what Trump's side is saying, Alan.
Okay. I know that you're not on that side.
So,
absolutely.
So is it Parler or Parlay? Do we know that?
It's French, and the verb is P-A-R-L-E-R, parlor, but that's pronounced parlay, so many people will spell it P-A-R-L-E-Y.
Okay. All right. Because yeah, I've seen it both, and I just didn't know which was
parlay is that's the French verb meaning to talk.
Right. Yes.
Speak.
Oh.
All about free speech.
All right. Let's see. Ross says, I've been finding it challenging to listen to some of the panelists urging calm at this time. Not that I think we should be up in armed revolt, but the simple fact that so many media outlets have covered straight up lies by the president as if it is normal is deeply concerning. The end result has been the normalization of mistruth. Politicians have always been careful about what they say, often not answering a question, but rarely do politicians straight up lie. This is no longer the case, and combined with an inability to categorize the things that Trump does and says means that we are in a very precarious situation. It is deeply concerning that we can even be this close to a potential coup without political leaders across the spectrum acting as if they're afraid of political retribution by stating a reality.
I love that letter.
Except, I guess. I mean, let me push back and ask the you know, rhetorical question. Wouldn't it be irresponsible for me to come on and advocate violence? I mean, of course I'm going to advocate calm. I believe in the institutions. I believe in the rule of law. I believe in the fact that the election was valid and that the American people spoke. And I still hold on to the belief that the right thing is going to happen on January 20th. So understand when I say calm, I do agree with what President-elect Biden is saying, is that we got to take the temperature down in this country because doing anything else right now is going to beget violence.
Alan?
I think the point about violence is very well taken. And I think that the more that Trump throws wood on the fire, the more likely it is that we're going to have this kind of, we're going to have a violent eruption in this country. And it scares the hell out of me.
Let's see. We'll go to, we go to Jay, who says, Fareed Zakaria gave a rather frightening way that President Trump getting placed either by Congress or states assigning certain electors. Nothing would surprise me. We just talked about that. Chris says, Alan, how much of the quiet from the White House is cover for a database deep cleaning attempting to protect the current administration?
Well, we've talked about that, too. I think Rosemary made a good point. Chris made a good point about that. You know, you do that and you've basically broken the law if you do that, quote, deep cleaning. I think there's a chance, certainly, that it'll be done because, you know, not everybody always obeys the law, period.
Mike says, if Trump seizes power, what are the chances that other countries get involved in favor of Biden?
What do you mean get involved? You mean send troops?
I guess.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to get that far.
And they've already gotten involved. What do you think Angela Merkel and Boris Johnson and everybody calling and basically supporting his election, which is something Trump denies, by congratulating him? What do you think that means? They're getting involved, except for Putin. And by the way, I don't think Putin wants him over there. A lot of people are saying, well, he'll go over to Russia. No, he won't. That's the last thing Putin wants is another guy over there who he can't get rid of and who brings shame and disgrace to his country. No, I think in the end, Putin has to play with the winner.
Olaf says, panel, it's all fairly depressing. I'm an immigrant and I'm not recognizing the country I'd once admired so much anymore. I'm not surprised that Trump is continuing his chaotic presidency to the bitter end. What I'm more worried about is that 70 million Americans adopted Trump as their archetype. Before the election, I listened to Trump followers, how they continuously proclaimed how he represented their values. That a racist, thoroughly corrupt, incredibly incompetent, morally corrupt, lying, 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 sexual predator is representing the values of 70 million Americans is utterly terrifying and deeply depressing. Time for some catnip bubbles, says Olaf.
it is, but, you know, Joe, I think we need to, and Chris, I'm going to go back to something you said last week because it's really struck with me. You know, we can't villainize all 70 million Americans that voted for Trump, because they did it for a whole host of reasons. And I do think that the Biden administration has got to substantially dig into a lot of the root causes, including, you know, the financial uncertainty, you know, the sense of safety. You know, there are a number of legitimate issues that the country has got to address. But I share one piece of it, and it's not the catnip bubbles, although I did wish it worked on me. It's more that I was shocked at the 70 million mark. I really didn't see that coming.
I want to change the subject.
72 million at this point, actually. I'm looking at the results right now, and every time I look at them, they astonish me. I mean, Biden is at 77 million and Trump is at 72 million. That is just amazing. I mean, I think if we had said that that would be the vote, I think if we had said that Trump was going to get 72 million votes ahead of Election Day, most of us would have assumed he won in a landslide. That many people voted, I think, is a good sign for the democracy, and also just remarkable.
Let's change the subject to something that we were talking about before, and that was the Supreme Court and the Affordable Care Act, with key justices signaling support for the ACA. At least five Supreme Court justices, including two members of the conservative majority, indicated on Tuesday they would reject attempts by Republicans and the Trump administration to kill the Affordable Care Act. It is not clear whether the court would strike down a provision of the act that initially required most Americans to obtain insurance or pay a penalty, a requirement that was rendered toothless in 2017 after Congress zeroed out the penalty. But the bulk of the sprawling 2010 health care law, President Barack Obama's defining domestic legacy, appeared likely to survive its latest encounter with the court. Both Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh said striking down the so-called individual mandate did not require the rest of the law to be struck down as well. Rosemary?
Well, I think that they did not signal support of the ACA. What they signaled for was a distaste for Congress asking them to do what Congress could not do itself, which was to hold the law up or to strike it down. And so it seems to me that this is the Roberts Court standing for the separation of powers as we've traditionally defined them, rather than some support for ACA. The effect for us, of course, is the same. The ACA, I think, may make it, and that is very good news in the middle of a pandemic. To have 20 million people thrown out of health coverage would be a worse disaster than already is on our hands. And as been pointed out, as people have lost jobs because of the pandemic, they have been able to continue health coverage because of the ACA. This is an act wildly unpopular at first that has grown in popularity and in support of the public because it freaking works. And Biden, this is, I think, a big reason that he ended up as the nominee and now the president, because he always said, we don't need a whole new law. Medicare for All may be fine, but we have a law, and all we have to do is adjust it. I think that will be a high priority of his administration.
Alan?
23 million. You said 20. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And I just don't get it. I don't understand how you can, if you're a Republican on the other side, you can stand up and say 23 million people should be without their health care. To me, it's grotesque.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think going into this, most legal observers thought this case had no chance with the Supreme Court, and that certainly seems
to be
the sentiment yesterday. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett in her hearings was very loath, as we all saw, as all Supreme Court justice nominees are, to give her thoughts away in any particular topic. But she even during her hearing, she was kind of skeptical of the idea that there wasn't severability with this law, that you couldn't, that even if the court ruled that the mandate is unconstitutional, that would mean that the whole law has to be tossed out. She indicated even during her hearing that that wasn't the case. And I think, you know, we heard more of that yesterday, that, you know, you can say the mandate is unconstitutional, and they may not even do that. But even if they did that, that doesn't mean the whole law has to go.
Bob, you have 30 seconds.
Just the interesting issue of the standing and whether Texas and a couple of the other states that had no harm had standing here. I'll also note that Texas today passed the 1 million mark for COVID. And if it was a country, it'd be the 10th largest population of COVID infections in the world. So, I mean, there's
Texas is a country,
just,
Bob.
Just remember that.
Says the Texan. Texan is a country.
A red country, I may add.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about COVID, and we'll continue our conversation with our panel on our last go-around. WAMC panel at WAMC.org to join in on the fun. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Our final go-around here with our group. We have about 15 more minutes and want to get into several more subjects. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo, if you are just joining us. If you are not just joining us, just a reminder who's with us. Okay, let's go to this story, which is, of course, about COVID. And the really sad news as this continues and we continue to break records that are just the most unfortunate records to break, and the latest being hospitalizations. 61,000 people yesterday hospitalized. The U.S. hospitalization rate reached a record as medical facilities are under great strain. And so that is one thing that is being dealt with across the country. As you remember the conversation we had very early on about do we have enough equipment? Do we have enough beds? Do we have all of this ready to go? And what we're finding is that months after the beginning, we still don't. The number of people hospitalized with the coronavirus tallied by the COVID tracking project has more than doubled since September. It now exceeds the peak that was early in the pandemic when 59,940 were hospitalized. Yesterday's number was 61,964. Those spikes in April and July lasted only a few days and quickly subsided, but as winter approaches, experts do not expect that to be the case this time. The U.S., which surpassed 10 million known cases on Sunday, is averaging more than 111 new cases a day, also a record according to the New York Times database. More than, and this is really scary, more than 139,800 new cases were announced in the United States on Tuesday, also the highest total ever of the pandemic. The country has surpassed 100,000 cases every day for over a week, pushing the seven-day average to more than 123,000 a day. Four states set single-day case records. 34 states and Guam added more cases in the last week than in any other seven-day stretch. More than 1,440 new deaths were reported on Tuesday, pushing the seven-day average to more than 1,000 new deaths a day for the first time since August 19. While the numbers of patients continue to climb, a shortage of nurses and other medical personnel is limiting the ability to add more hospital beds to care for them. I could go on as far as the horrible news about all of this, but I think you get the idea. Bob, go to you first.
The trend lines are absolutely terrifying. You know, we're up over 242,000 deaths. And what really scares me, Joe, is that we're heading into the worst part of the season for flu, for COVID. And when you combine the fact that we're going to be inside because of the winter, and then you add on things like the holidays, I agree with the assessment that it has the potential to be a very, very grim, winter. Again, just listening to the news a little bit earlier, you know, they're setting up mobile hospitals in states in and around us. I can only keep asking people to do some of the basic things, you know, social distance, wear a mask, wash your hands. If you're not feeling well, you know, for the love of God, please stay home. You know, the simple things that we could have done to avert where we are right now reflects the lack of leadership in many parts of the country. But please, everybody, this is not going away. And the best thing you could do is to be vigilant.
Alan?
I absolutely agree with everything Bob just said. I don't have a thing to add other than that this president is culpable. And and because of his nonsensical, you know, reasoning that we shouldn't wear masks, we shouldn't use social distance, even though he had it, it just really, as far as I'm concerned, is a great argument for impeachment, but which we're not going to get.
Rosemary.
Yeah, this is American exceptionalism, not the way we used to mean it. And it is indeed a hallmark of the lack of leadership that we've had, well, for the last 4 years, but certainly for the last year as we've confronted this. And Biden was right that we're going to have a dark winter. But there is hope at the end of the tunnel, and that includes a vaccine, a number of vaccines that are showing promising possibilities for the year ahead. And an effort, a new effort, much needed, long needed, to depoliticize the whole public health issue. Biden keeps saying, and I think that now it will be enforced, that wearing a mask is not a mark of your political beliefs. It's about keeping away germs. And that's the way it should be. It should have been that way from the beginning.
Chris.
I'm sorry for all the lives needlessly lost.
Absolutely. Chris.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to say. I mean, we've been talking about this for, you know, what, eight months now, and I don't know. I mean, it's just, I agree with everything, well, almost everything that's been said so far. And, you know, I part of the problem with what's going on with the election and the dispute is that we're not focusing on other things, and, you know, including the virus and including the stimulus package that needs to get done. You know, McConnell had kind of signaled that he wanted to get it done by the end of the year. And if this, you know, with all that's happening right now, I'm just not sure if that's realistic or not.
When you think about that message getting lost, I mean, not to be overly cynical, but I mean, I think we just have the track record, right? I mean, the president told us that after the election, we wouldn't hear about it anymore. We didn't really hear about it before the election. So there's no reason to believe that other than from President-elect Biden, we're probably not going to hear about it.
Joe, 150,000 cases.
I'm sorry, Alan, I can't hear you.
Yes. Oh, I know why you can't hear me. I get it.
Okay.
150,000 cases in one day. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's stunning. And so I don't know how you turn your back on that, Bob, as far as just to not even have it on the radar that this is happening every single day.
Yeah, Joe, and I think in just a matter of days, Biden has shown more leadership than we've seen almost in the entire time from Trump. You know, Pence was what I hear. Pence was supposed to go on vacation, and he canceled his Florida vacation. But you know, that's probably because the weather wasn't going to be nice. And it's this attitude that, you know, I really don't care, that, or they really don't care, that I think disturbs me the most, because this is a fundamental responsibility of government. And as I've said before, a pandemic is by its nature requires federal coordination and intervention and leadership, because you just can't have the states doing their things independently, because as we've seen, you know, look at the super spreader events, even things like the motorcycle rally in the Dakotas. Look at the numbers around the country. With that said, my heart goes out to people. You know, my heart goes out to people obviously who have lost loved ones, but also for those that are struggling at home and struggling with depression and the sense of hopelessness. You know, the idea that our kids are growing up in this environment of fear, and at the same time, when you start to lay over this super hot rhetoric of hate and irresponsibility, it's a terrible mix, which again gets me back to something we said earlier about taking the temperature down and making sure what we're doing right for the health and safety of our communities. And Chris,
but
you're
panel,
right, we need a stimulus package severely.
Alan?
But panel, do you believe that this president didn't know that he was going to be causing deaths by his irresponsible, you know, rallies and all the rest of it? Do you think it's something we've all been arguing about? Is he so nuts that he thinks that nothing matters and that it's all baloney? Or is he even worse and more insidious? Does he know that what's going to happen and doesn't care.
You know, Alan, I have to believe it's the latter.
The latter,
I really do.
And you said Rosemary, you were in agreement to that as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Which really makes him a murderer.
I have to believe that he couldn't possibly be so incompetent and to not recognize that his events and his position are causing deaths. I think he's just too arrogant to be able to admit when he makes a mistake, and it's damn the torpedoes full speed ahead on everything in his life, and now we're reaping what was sown.
Bob, let me ask you about, SUNY Albany is now on pause, and UAlbany, and I'll get in trouble if I say SUNY Albany, I'm sorry. UAlbany is on pause, not from you, but from them. But this is something that has been monitored, and you have a really good team that are working on this. And I'm just curious from your vantage point and from your level, I mean, this is all really complicated, and you try to control it as much as you can in this ecosystem that is the campus. But then how do you react to the outside world, which, yes, is of course better in New York State as compared to other states, but yet still it goes beyond those borders?
It's impossible to separate the university from the community, in every sense of the word. It's a public place. It isn't like there are gates and walls keeping people off campus or keeping students on. We tried, I think, admirably, as much as we possibly could, to provide both a safe and nurturing environment. I'm personally a little bit heartbroken. I have been teaching an in-person class for first years, and I know how important that is and has been to them. But I also think it was the right decision to go on pause, just because the numbers were seen. But you're getting to a broader issue, Joe. That COVID just isn't on a campus. It's within the community, and that's why everybody has a responsibility to try to do some of the simple things that we could do to try to be safe. But equally important, try to allow people to keep society going on and keep their jobs. Keeping the economy going is really important, because you start to add the uncertainty and financial uncertainty to the health uncertainty and to the election uncertainty, and there's more to life than uncertainty. So I applaud what the university has done and tried to do. It just breaks my heart that we couldn't get through the last 2 weeks.
Chris, I'm curious, you've mentioned this a couple of times as we were talking about it, but one of the big issues, of course, is also the stimulus. Do you expect to see anything between now and a new Congress?
Yeah, I do. Just because of that January 5th election, I think that that McConnell will want to give the two Georgia incumbents something that they can proudly tout as an accomplishment going into that. I mean, that assumes that Trump is willing to sign the thing, which I don't exactly know why he wouldn't, and that assumes that Nancy Pelosi is willing to work on it, and I think it would be irresponsible of her not to. But I do think I don't know what it'll be exactly, and who knows if that doesn't mean there can't be another one early into the next year, but I think that there will be something. I think there has to be.
But we thought that, right, Alan, before the general election?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you and I have been together too long, Joe. It didn't take me more than 1 second to say yes. We thought that. We thought a responsible Congress, a responsible Mitch McConnell, who knows what the relationship between McConnell and his right-wing senators are, which we keep hearing, and the president who says he wants one. But I don't think he's going to want one now. Now he's not getting elected.
Let's see. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us, and thanks for the good conversation. Thanks to all of the letter writers as well. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks to Chris and Bob and Rosemary. Always a pleasure. We will be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.